Hello, Noir Mystery fans, and welcome to episode 6 of Thunder Road by Colin Holmes. I'm Gabe Shear, and this is CamCat Unwrapped. Previously on Thunder Road, with Caples blown to bits, Gentry beaten to death, Doyle's place burnt to the ground, and the Griffins dead, Jeff and Ronnie have no choice but to hit Thunder Road. If Sharp can manage not to put his foot in his mouth constantly, perhaps he and Ronnie will solve the mystery in Roswell. Rusty sure seemed to hold a piece of the puzzle in his hands, but who believes a kid, right?
Chapter 31. The trip to Santa Fe started quietly. Ronnie stared out the passenger window. Sharp was deep in thought. Finally, she broke the ice. Corona said the number of visitors has dropped. Corona? Rusty's grandmother, Ronnie said. She's a very nice lady. Said she's been there for 75 years. Huh. She said the army was there for weeks. Sharp nodded. It looked like it. It was a large-scale operation. Whatever it was bigger than a weather balloon. They're having a big meeting about it in Santa Fe. That's where we're headed. Sharp adjusted the rearview mirror. Were you going to mention that at some point? Ronnie lit a cigarette. Sharp shrugged. I just did. She blew smoke out her side of the car. Sharp slowed the car and pulled to the side of the road. He twisted in the seat to face her. We need to get this cleared up. We're stuck out here together, and I can't do a thing about it. But I will be damned if I'm going to put up with this all the way to Nevada. Spit it out. Why are you so mad at me? She looked at him for a moment and bit her lip in that innocent way that took his mind away from being angry and went places he didn't think they'd ever go. I'm not mad at you, she said. You have an amazing way of showing that. I'm upset at the whole mess. Ronnie waved her hands at the flat land surrounding them for as far as the eye could see. I don't like not knowing what's going on. I'm not happy that we're on the run. And I'm worried.
About what? Sharp asked. There was plenty to choose from.
I don't know, said Ronnie. That's the whole problem. I feel like there's some boogeyman out there that we can't see, and he's going to get us any minute now. We're out here in the middle of the desert all alone, and you're chasing this story about the mob and mystery guys who want to kill us, and if I think about it too much, it scares me.
Her eyes were getting moist. I get it.
And there's nothing we can do.
She sounded miserable and small. There is. We can go to Santa Fe and see what's there, Sharp said. Then we can go to Las Vegas and see what's there. That's what we can do. He reached across and took her hand.
Is that how you get through this?
You take one step after the next, prepare as best you can, and keep moving forward.
That's not exactly a bold plan of action, Mr. Sharp.
It's what's kept this pissant cowboy alive so far. She stared at her hand in his, and her voice was quiet.
I'm sorry about that.
Me too, Sharp admitted. I didn't want to get you into this.
I know, but that's not what I meant.
She leaned in.
I don't think I'm ready to pretend to be Mr. and Mrs. Seeing you write that down caught me off guard.
I didn't mean to take liberties, honest. I just thought it would... She placed her finger on his lips.
You should stop talking now.
He nodded. She slid her hand from his.
We're 1,000 miles from home, in the middle of nowhere. It's just you and me now. There are no bad guys out here, no ghosts of husbands or brothers or ex-wives or missing boyfriends.
It might be a good place for a clean sheet to start over, but I'm not there. Not yet.
I really didn't,
she shushed him.
And I really am sorry I called you a pissant cowboy. I didn't mean that.
About that,
shush.
He nodded silently and pulled back onto the highway. The square in Santa Fe looked every bit of the 400 years old the town was supposed to be, right up until he wheeled the cord around the burrow pulling the cart, and the engine broke the afternoon siesta silence. The Indians, selling silver goods and trinkets in the shade of the surrounding covered walkways, looked up at the sound, and then went back to rearranging their wares on blankets on the ground.
Corona said they were meeting at the palace,
Ronnie offered.
That a hotel?
Sharp heaved the big wheel to get around a tight corner never meant for automobiles.
The Palace of the Governors, Ronnie said. It's kind of like the state capitol building, but it's not.
Is it near a hotel? He cranked the wheel around another tight corner and slowed for an Indian woman and her kids crossing the narrow road. Getting through this town was a workout. Ronnie stubbed her smoke out.
I bet there's a phone book inside. We could find one in the yellow pages.
Sharp parked the cord on the street, and they headed into the big ancient adobe palace, the original seat of the Spanish government of the territory in the 1620s. It had been replaced as the state capital by newer buildings, with things like electricity and plumbing, but renovations now let it serve as offices and a museum. There was a row of phone booths along the wall, but Ronnie pointed to a large counter with a sign reading Information. The frumpy woman behind the counter shuffled papers and never acknowledged them. Sharp was sure she was related to the guardians he'd waited on in the Dallas and Tarrant County courthouses. He cleared his throat with enough volume that it echoed. She finally raised her eyes in annoyance.
We're here for the meeting about the crash in Roswell, Sharp announced.
Names?
Jeff Sharp and Veronica Arquette.
She scanned a piece of paper.
And you're with?
Sharp thought for a second. He needed a good explanation, but Ronnie beat him to it, handing over a business card.
Mr. Sharp is an investigator. I'm the chief stenographer with the 67th District Court in Fort Worth.
The woman pulled her reading glasses up and examined the card. Then over the frames to scrutinize the two of them before pointing to her left.
Down this hall, third door past the water fountain.
Sharp whispered as they walked. Chief stenographer? I didn't know you were the head honcho. She smiled slyly.
It's Judge Rowan's card. Just has the name of the court on it. I kind of gave myself a promotion.
He grinned. Atta girl. He cracked the door of the meeting room open slightly for a peek, then pulled it open. A janitor was erasing a blackboard in the corner, and the U-shaped arrangement of tables was empty of everything but a few half-full water glasses, but no signs that the attendees were coming back.
They done? Sharp asked.
The janitor didn't even look over his shoulder.
Broke up half an hour ago.
Damn it. Sharp slumped. He didn't know what they might have learned, but it would have been better than what they didn't know now. Ronnie shook her head.
Now what?
Sharp shrugged. Up for some Mexican food?
Really? That's the extent of your investigation here?
Well, I thought we'd swing by the newspaper and see if they know anything on the way.
The secretary at the Santa Fe New Mexican perked up when Sharp mentioned they were from Fort Worth and looking into the crash. She summoned forth a short, slight, balding gentleman with a quick smile who introduced himself as Manuel Garcia, the reporter who'd worked the story. His first question immediately made him a friend in Sharp.
Have you had lunch?
He steered them to a hole in the adobe wall cafe. A few minutes later, they each had a bright red bowl of pozole. Garcia told him the story of the crash, most of which they'd already learned. He'd met and interviewed Darnell, but didn't get much.
The man was skeptical of anyone from the big city, especially reporters from the big city newspaper. Sharp nodded. The population of Dallas and Fort Worth probably exceeded all of the souls in New Mexico. Garcia had been to the ranch, but Darnell hadn't taken him to the crash site, so Sharp traded the man his information for goodwill.
Did you talk to anyone at the Roswell Air Base?
Garcia was enjoying his soup with one hand and taking rapid notes with the other.
We haven't had much luck with the Army in our part of the world, said Sharp.
Same here. Garcia wiped the corner of his mouth. But the rumor mill says big changes are coming to the Army.
You mean splitting off the Air Force?
Sharp took a large drink of water to combat the burn of the chili pepper soup. Garcia raised an eyebrow.
What makes you say that?
Sharp shrugged. I've got information that there's a proposal to do just that, and it's on Truman's desk waiting for Congress to get back in session.
That's supposed to be classified, said Garcia. I stumbled on that at the base, and the commandant himself asked me to keep it on the QT.
You're holding the story just because he asked? Garcia waved his soup spoon.
Certainly. If I break that, they may never give me anything again.
He paused to give his position a little more gravity.
I believe there is a lot more to this story than just a weather balloon.
Ronnie looked at Sharp. He nodded, but wasn't ready to give away all his cards. Newspaper in Fort Worth said it was a flying saucer.
I think it was an experimental aircraft the Army is trying to keep under wraps.
The atomic plane? Sharp asked.
Could be.
Or a helicopter?
Garcia frowned.
A what?
I saw a helicopter at the airbase in Fort Worth, Sharp said. The propeller's on top, lifts it straight up and can set it straight down. Doesn't need a runway.
Looks like it could go just about anywhere, even a remote ranch. Garcia sat back in his chair.
That could explain a lot. I understand there are some things happening in the Nevada desert. Hard to get more remote than that.
He finished his soup and ordered sopaipillas for the table.
So what's all this to you?
Sharp looked at Ronnie.
We have a friend who was at the base. He disappeared right after this happened. We're trying to find him. Nevada is our next stop.
You with Army Intelligence? Garcia watched for a reaction. Sharp held his poker face.
No, I'm a private investigator. We kind of backed into this.
The Army sent a couple of assholes out here last week. Garcia frowned in disgust.
They didn't make many friends, threatened the editor. That didn't sit well.
Sharp's hand went to the back of his head.
We've met. They aren't doing much for Army public relations.
They enjoyed the sopaipillas, and Garcia gave them a little history of New Mexico and the Army, complete with secret laboratories, atom bomb tests, and other mysteries. He ended the lesson and stood to get back to work.
I think New Mexico is about done as a secret base for the Army. They wore out their welcome with the Manhattan Project. But Nevada is a whole other story. That's the absolute middle of nowhere. If you wanted a place to set up a secret military project and have it stay hidden if everything goes to hell, that's about the perfect spot.
Sharp idled the cord in the shade of the tourist court's adobe portico.
Wait here, I'll get us checked in.
Worried after last time?
Ronnie checked her lipstick in the compact's mirror.
A little.
He returned with two keys. She raised an eyebrow.
Really?
Hey, I'm making sure you understand I have the proper respect for your situation.
He parked in front of rooms 106 and 107.
Well, I didn't mean that we couldn't, use it as cover, and
he raised a hand.
Mrs. Arquette, you made yourself extremely clear.
I'll get the bags.
Sharp shrugged out of his fine Italian leather shoulder holster and tossed the Colt on top of his coat in the side chair.
He pulled his boots off and fell back on the bed.
Well, this was a bust, Ronnie said through the wall.
I think we know more about what's going on than he does.
The ceiling had a small edge where the paint was a tad different in the lamplight. He stared at it.
Is there more in Las Vegas? What if that's a bust, too?
Her voice was fainter. Then he heard the shower begin.
I'm trusting the major. He said visit Las Vegas.
Fabulous Las Vegas, Ronnie interjected.
The sound of the running water changed. She was in the shower. Naked.
Fabulous Las Vegas.
He blew smoke at the ceiling as his imagination was running away with him. Chapter 32.
The song is a lot more fun than the actual road.
Ronnie fanned herself with the folded map as they turned off Route 66 in the Kingman, Arizona of the second verse.
It is not a lot of kicks.
Sharp stretched behind the wheel. He rolled his shoulder. 20 long hours behind the wheel had stiffened his favorite war injury.
Nope, I'm tired of kicks. I just want to get there.
Ronnie sighed.
Next time, maybe we should take the train.
Next time? I'm not planning on a next time. I don't think my butt can take much more time in this seat, but we're gaining on it.
He nodded to a giant billboard on the side of the road, imploring them to visit the El Grande Hotel in fabulous Las Vegas, only 2 hours ahead. Sharp stifled a yawn. 2.5 hours later, they reached the engineering marvel that was Boulder Dam and Lake Mead. They had seen dozens of billboards for the El Grande offering rooms with refrigerated air. Not one, but two swimming pools, casino gambling, the world-famous Chuck Wagon Buffet, live entertainment, and this weekend, Jack Benny appearing in the Opera House. Sharp was pretty sure that out here in the middle of nowhere, the Jack Benny on a desert stage and the Jack Benny on the radio were two completely different guys. Las Vegas had a single stoplight, so it was that much more impressive than Roswell. Sharp wondered if they'd had others that might have burned to a crisp in the heat. The late afternoon sun beat down on the intersection that featured little more than a few two-story buildings, most of which sported new neon signs advertising poker, blackjack, and casino gambling. A now familiar-looking billboard pointed the way toward the Strip and the El Grande.
Any idea where we're staying?
Ronnie asked. Sharp cocked his head. Maybe. The place we're looking for is called the Flamingo. Gentry indicated it was just outside of town on something called the Strip.
I wonder why they don't all have billboards like the El Grande.
She lit a cigarette and blew the smoke toward downtown as they followed the arrow on the billboard. The sign in front of the Flamingo answered her question. Closed for renovations. The parking lot was empty and craft paper covered the interior of the large plate glass windows. They got out and stretched as the setting sun maintained the 100-degree heat.
So this is what got Bugsy killed.
Sharp was both exhausted and impressed. The modern architecture with the giant stonework and expansive glass was much more striking than what the Stockman's Association back in Fort Worth had tried to do with the same look. Ronnie waved her pall mall at the building.
How'd they expect it to make money way out here in the middle of nothing?
The idea was a resort, a destination. Casino gambling and good times, just a half day's drive from L.A. Sharp climbed the steps and cupped his hand to the glass to see if there might be anything visible. There wasn't.
So you live in Los Angeles and can drive across town to the beach, or drive across the desert to get here?
Ronnie shook her head, disbelieving.
Somebody didn't think this through.
Sharp mopped his brow with his handkerchief.
Jen said they spent over $5 million.
Wow.
Ronnie flapped the map fan harder and asked the obvious question.
So, now what?
Sharp looked one last time at the vacant hotel and herded her to the car. Let's go see about that refrigerated air they're so proud of at the El Grande.
That might be the best idea you've had this whole trip, Jefferson. I'm sweating like a pig.
Sharp held the door to the cord open for her. I thought women didn't sweat. Aren't you supposed to glow or something? Ronnie rolled her eyes.
Fine, then. I'm glowing like a pig. Get me to the refrigerated air.
The El Grande was the opposite of Bugsy's Flamingo in every way. The Flamingo was sleek and modern and closed. The El Grande looked like a bunkhouse with a giant windmill on the roof. The wide covered portico fronted a vaguely Spanish mission style, and the hotel was buzzing with people. Sharp pulled the cord into the drive, and the college-age kid sporting some of the gaudiest Western wear he'd ever seen opened his door. The bolo tie, fringed vest, and pants that tucked into pointy-toed boots were topped off by an enormous 10-gallon hat that would have made the boys at the Rafter B laugh their butts off.
Howdy, folks!
The young man hustled to help Ronnie out.
Welcome to the El Grande. I'm Kenny. Checking in? Can I get your bags?
Kenny was far too chipper for the triple-digit afternoon. Sharp looked him up and down. You a bellboy?
Yes, sir.
Kenny doffed his humongous hat.
At your service. Checking in?
We don't have reservations, Sharp said. Who do I see about rooms? Ronnie put her hand on his arm.
Room. Just one.
Sharp gave her a sideways glance, and she stuck her arm through his.
Let's see about that refrigerated air they're so proud of, honey.
Right this way, ma'am.
Kenny sidled up to Sharp and nodded to the cord.
That's a swell car, mister.
Sharp acknowledged the compliment, but was undecided about the dude ranch appeal of the El Grande. They followed Kenny the cowbell boy through the front doors of the hotel, and a blast of frigid air hit them. It was cold, almost frosty, and magnificent. Ronnie swooned as the deliciously chilled air washed over her.
We're staying here.
Sharp patted her hand. Let's see if we can get a room first.
Doesn't matter, Ronnie shook her head. I'm not leaving.
Sharp's eyes adjusted from the blazing afternoon sun. He ran a tired hand across his 5 o'clock shadow and took in the room. If Gentry had gone to cowboy heaven, it would look like this. A huge wagon wheel chandelier with lights like old oil lamps hung over the main lobby, barely lighting the expansive room. Tables and chairs made from tree branches that had the bark removed and varnished yellow surrounded the space. Other side chairs made from cattle horns and upholstered in cowhides spiced up the decor. The tile floor had branding iron impressions all over it. Across the lobby, an authentic-looking Conestoga wagon hid the front desk. The desk clerk had on the same style getup as Kenny the cowbell boy.
Checking in today, sir. Do you have a reservation?
A bright gold name tag had Hank stenciled neatly in big black letters. Sharp wondered how long the man's name had been Hank. He looked more like a Rodney.
I don't, Sharp admitted. What are your room rates? We'll be here a week.
Hank nodded.
That would be $450, sir.
More than reasonable. Even Mrs. Hunnicky wasn't that cheap. Sharp laid $5 on the counter and paused before signing the register. He looked to Ronnie, who fanned herself and seemed disinterested.
$450 a night,
Hank hastily amended.
Sir.
Ronnie leaned in against the desk and breathed in the cool air.
It's worth it.
Sharp surrendered and fished three of Doyle's tens out of his wallet. The clerk rang a dinner triangle and Kenny popped to attention. Hank slid a sparkling gold room key across the counter.
Room 72, West.
Sharp handed over the keys to the cord to Kenny, and the cowbell boy darted back to the front door. If Kenny wanted to pretend to be a cowboy, he needed to work harder on his moseying. Hank pointed out a few of the hotel's amenities, the east and west swimming pools, the full-service bar, the world-famous chuck wagon buffet, and a 25-cent chip good in the casino for each of them. Their luggage would be delivered to their room promptly. Sharp picked up the room key and gestured in the general direction of the bar. I could use a cold drink. He raised an eyebrow at Ronnie. How about you? Ronnie nodded. A drink and refrigerated air? Lead on. The saloon continued the hokey western theme as half of the seats at the bar were saddles. That was a little over the top for Sharp. You think Rusty back in Roswell has a saddle he sits on at the dinner table? They opted for a side table with ordinary chairs. It was early afternoon, but patrons filled the place with a mix of young and older couples, but no kids. Maybe they were packed around the swimming pools. Their waitress appeared, a stunning buxom blonde whose too tight cowgirl outfit was similar to the others, but she wore only the vest and very snug fringed pants. Sharp might have noticed an ample amount of cleavage had Ronnie not yawned and stretched her arm in front of his face. Tired? He asked innocently. She took his chin in her hand and turned his head toward her. Very. I'm bushed, and you were the one doing all the driving. You must be gassed. A little. The waitress put a hand on her hip and smacked her gum. Y'all want anything? Sharp paid careful attention to lighting his cigarette rather than the cowgirl. Scotch and soda and a gin fizz. Gotcha. She swirled on a boot and disappeared. Ronnie put a cigarette to her lips. He lit it for her. Smooth. I'm learning. She blew smoke away and smiled. I like that. Her eyes swept across the dining room. So what's the plan, Jefferson?
I need a nap, Sharp yawned. I hadn't planned beyond that.
Ronnie raised a lovely eyebrow. I mean, now that we're in fabulous Las Vegas, what are we looking for? The drinks arrived, and Sharp took the opportunity to check the non-existent laces in his boots and not ogle the cowgirl. She set the glasses down, and Ronnie shooed her away. Sharp took a sip of his more soda than scotch. At least it was wet and cold. I'd like to find Jerry Cartwright. Yes, I know that. So would I. Ronnie blew smoke in a huff that for a moment made him wonder how close she and the major had been. So how are we going to do that? Sharp shrugged. I think it's going to be a lot of looking around and asking questions. Courthouse research to see if he's bought a house here, checking the phone company to see if he has a new phone, see if the PD has any info. So the real danger we are facing on this trip is paper cuts? Ronnie asked. And dust allergies. He grinned. Courthouse records rooms are pretty musty. You know, Ronnie slid a hand up his arm and squeezed, the private eyes in the movies are a lot more exciting. They have editors to cut out all the boring parts. Two rounds later, the small talk died away and the reality of their single room loomed over the table. You cooled off? She stubbed out her cigarette in their half-full ashtray. I'm good. Better. The refrigerated air is nice, but after all day in the car, I could use a shower. His mind went there. An inquiry at the front desk earned them a bellboy to guide them to the room. You folks are in our Cattle Baron's suite. It features our exclusive king-size bed, a phonograph, console radio, easy access to the West Pool. He carried on, selling the list of amenities all the way to the door. He unlocked the suite with a flourish, and they stepped through. Ronnie's eyes went wide. I didn't know they made beds that big. I bet it doubles as a tennis court. Sharp looked to the bellboy. We call it king size. It's exclusive to the El Grande, he said with great pride. Sharp got the remainder of the nickel tour and tipped the kid a dime. He closed the door and turned to find Ronnie sitting on the corner of the gigantic bed. "You sure about this?" he asked, then stifled an exhausted yawn. "I'm not." She stood up, took two quick steps, and stood before him. "But I'm not running from it anymore." Sharp breathed in the aroma of her perfume, and it took him back to the way she'd felt in his arms at the bamboo room. Her big browns sparkled, and he pulled her to him. The ghosts, ex-wives, and missing boyfriends faded away, and they found each other for a kiss that had been 20 years in the making. Their lips parted, and he looked deep into her eyes. "Ronnie." She put a finger on his lips. "First, I need that shower." When she returned, freshly scrubbed and peeking out of the robe the hotel had provided, Sharp was sound asleep. A cowgirl waitress brought them coffee and asked if they'd like a mimosa. "Never heard of it. Bring us two." He hunted for a menu and looked to Ronnie. "Okay?"
"Sure, might as well."
The waitress directed them to the breakfast buffet, all they could eat for a dime. Sharp was amazed and starved. 10 minutes later, he was shoveling down steak and eggs and pancakes. "I didn't mean to fall asleep."
"It's been a long couple of days." "I get it," she smiled. "But your timing could use some work."
The waitress reappeared with tall glasses of orange juice spiked with champagne. Ronnie took a sip and instantly motioned for another.
"This is delicious. I wonder if I can grow oranges in Fort Worth."
"I'd rather work on the champagne tree," Sharp said. "I can see why rooms are $5 if they're giving away booze like this." Every table in the reasonably crowded restaurant was partaking. He tipped the waitress and asked that they bring the car around. Kenny, the cowbell boy, opened Ronnie's door, and Sharp noticed they'd washed the cord. It looked like $1 million, and he tipped Kenny a dime for his efforts. Kenny's smile faltered a bit as he felt the coin. He probably thought a guy with a car like that would be a bigger tipper. They headed for the Clark County Courthouse. Sharp had been conditioned to meet yet another civil servant with a dull attitude and the customer service speed of the average tortoise. Instead, the young woman behind the counter seemed almost glad to have someone ask to see the records room. It wasn't the cavernous dungeon of Dallas County. It was a small room with windows on one wall and a well-cataloged file of the very few records. Predictably, USAAF Major Jerome Cartwright wasn't in them. Ronnie eased a finger through the columns in the ledger.
"Are we entirely sure his name is really Jerry Cartwright?"
"I'm not completely sure of any of this," Sharp admitted. "Even the stuff I've seen with my own eyes." He slumped back in the wooden chair and rubbed his eyes. They'd been at this for an hour and a half and were nowhere closer. About the only good thing was having Ronnie to help. She had spent years in the court system and understood how things worked.
"You weren't kidding about dusty records and paper cuts. You sure you want to do this for a living, Jeff?"
His mind wandered back to the flying lights and he and Dollar racing across the plains in pursuit of the rustlers. "I'll take the paperwork over the fireworks any day." She slid the cabinet door closed and turned for the door.
"Yep, nothing gets your blood pumping like the thrill of a folder being in the wrong drawer."
They thanked the clerk and walked into a blazing morning sun.
"How do people live in this desert?"
Ronnie shaded her eyes. "That may be the draw of refrigerated air and swimming pools."
"Any chance that's where this research leads?"
Sharp watched something in the distance. The unmistakable silhouette of a B-36 was lumbering across the far sky, headed to the northwest at a steady pace. "It may lead that way." He pointed to a low range of foothills that appeared to be the destination of the big bomber.
"So we're going to follow an airplane?" Ronnie sighed.
It's a fast car, hon, but I don't think it's that fast.
I don't want to follow too close, Sharp said. I'm pretty sure it's headed to the new atomic bomb test range.
This place just gets better all the time.
Sharp grinned. It is fabulous. Ronnie didn't grin back.
You know the hotel has 2 swimming pools?
She craned her neck and fanned the top of her blouse.
I saw that.
He squinted against the glare and shimmering waves coming off the blacktop.
You're not thinking about skipping out on a fun time chasing Army Air Force aircraft, are you? Lie out by the pool and drink mimosas?
That is a great idea, Jefferson. I'll even let you buy me a new swimsuit. Let me know what the flyboys have to say.
Right after we follow these planes.
And how do you expect to follow airplanes?
Well, first we stop by Sears.
Chapter 33.
The Las Vegas outpost of Sears Roebuck and Company had a picnic basket. It had a snack bar that packed them sandwiches. They also had replacement binoculars and a Kodak that was on par with his destroyed old Argus, and 3 canteens. Sharp had been thirsty in the middle of nowhere before. Ronnie found a new pair of cat's eye sunglasses, a sun hat, and modeled a new swimsuit that made him reconsider the hotel swimming pool. Instead, they roared off toward a minuscule dot on the map that Rand McNally called Indian Springs.
This is a whole lot of nothing.
Ronnie's hat fluttered in the breeze as she focused the binoculars out her open window.
You can't see anything?
Scrub brush and desert, she replied.
You're supposed to be watching for aircraft, Sharp reminded her.
They're still out there.
Ronnie shifted in her seat.
Way off, little dots, but that's it.
Way off is good.
It is, asked Ronnie.
It is a bombing range. Sharp glanced at her meaningfully. We don't want to be too close.
If I'd have known your picnic would put us smack between a bombing range and Death Valley, I definitely would have opted for the pool.
Sharp grinned. This is a much more entertaining way to get a sunburn. The entire town of Indian Springs was a lone gas station. They stopped and chatted with the pump jockey about aircraft and the Air Force and the temperature. Sharp gave the guy $3 for the tank full of ethyl, and they rumbled back onto Highway 95. Sharp watched the attendant in the rearview mirror as they roared away. The guy scribbled something in a notepad and then ran back inside. Strange, to be moving so quickly in this heat. He made a mental note. They saw no sign of aircraft for the hour's drive to Tonopah before stopping for their picnic and a couple of warm Cokes. The cramped cord was not the most comfortable place to eat, but it was the only shade they'd seen for miles. The desert was deserted. No other cars, trees, or signs of life for miles around. Ronnie shaded her eyes.
I can see why men from Mars would be right at home here.
Outside of the ironically named town of Warm Springs, another car appeared in the rearview mirror, but it stayed back far enough that Sharp couldn't tell the make, model, or even color. But it was back there for more than a dozen miles. He got a bad feeling and put his right foot down. The supercharged aircraft engine under the hood did its thing, and after a moment, Ronnie looked over.
Just how fast are we going, Mr. Rickenbacker?
Sharp checked. Almost 100.
Any reason in particular?
Her voice sounded more than a little concerned. There was a car behind us. Sharp checked the mirrors. He's gone now.
So we don't have to be going this fast, defying death out here where even the buzzards couldn't find us?
He dialed it back.
Thank you.
She was cut off by the shadow that flashed over, and the roar of the engine as a P-51 Mustang fighter buzzed over the car, not 100 feet off the surface of the road.
Jesus!
Sharp swerved at the surprise but held onto the car, braking and easing it down. In the distance, the plane banked up and away and arced back toward them. Sharp's mind quickly returned to Italy and remembered a Messerschmitt doing the exact same thing just before it started spitting bullets at his platoon. There they had some cover. These were wide-open flatlands. The nearest cover might be back at the El Grande. The Mustang lined up straight down the highway and headed right at them at 250 miles an hour. Sharp floored the cord.
"What are you doing?"
Ronnie was terrified. He was, too. "Increasing the closing speed. He'll have less time to react." The speedometer hurried towards 70, then 80. The fighter was getting larger in the windshield. Sharp zigged to the empty left lane, then back to the right, waiting for the guns to erupt. The P-51 screamed over, and he swore he could count the rivets on the underside. Sharp checked the mirrors, but the pilot had taken the plane straight up after the pass. Ronnie's eyes were wide as Sharp eased the big car to the side of the road. He grabbed the Bausch & Lomb's and jumped out, scanning the skies for the fighter. Nothing. It was as if the plane had vanished. Ronnie crawled out, shaken.
"What the hell was that? Why would some damned fool do that? We could have been killed."
In the distance behind them, a car topped a rise. Sharp trained the binoculars on the horizon. The heat radiating from the road made identifying it impossible, but Sharp had the impression it might be a gray Plymouth. He hated gray Plymouths. "Get in the car." Ronnie looked at him.
"What? Why?"
He pointed at the vehicle in the distance. She jumped in.
"I hate this."
2 painfully quiet hours later, the cord was covered in road dust and almost out of gas when he pulled under the awning at the El Grande. A cowbell boy who wasn't Kenny took the keys, and Sharp asked him to have it washed and gassed. Ronnie went straight into the hotel without a word. He found her in the bar. Her gin was already half gone, and the cigarette in her fingers trembled. Her blank stare reminded him of the last time he'd found someone shell-shocked at the bar.
"Ronnie, is this how it was? In the war?"
"What do you mean?"
"Never knowing whether you'd survive the day or the next few minutes?"
He gently touched her shoulder. "You just hope you're on good terms with a guardian angel." She took a long drag on her smoke.
"Stuff like this happened a lot.
You got used to it," said Sharp.
"A hell of a thing to get used to."
She turned to look him in the eye.
"I'm going to the room for a while."
"I'll come with you." He waved to the bartender. "Let me get us a couple to take with us."
"Alone, Jeff. I need some time."
He nodded.
"Thank you for keeping us alive."
She kissed his cheek and walked out. Sharp watched her leave, then found a stool. The woman behind the bar gave him a friendly smile. Her cowgirl outfit wasn't as revealing as the waitress's. She had a shirt on, but the fringed vest was tight, and the strings of the bolo tie directed his eyes to her cleavage.
"She needs a moment. You need a drink."
"Double scotch. Rocks." He looked at the vacant doorway. The drink appeared instantly, and he pulled a lucky. But his Zippo wouldn't fire. That figured. A day in the desert would be hell on lighter fluid. The bartender picked up on his problem and passed him a matchbook with the scotch. He lit up and noticed the logo on the matches. The flamingo. He passed it back to the woman.
"Thanks. You advertising for the competition?"
She read the cover herself with a smirk.
"My last job. Don't tell."
He took a sizable slug of the scotch. It had been a long day.
"I don't think she was mad at you,"
the barmaid observed. Sharp nodded.
"No, for once I don't think I flipped her wig."
"Ah, you don't seem like the aggravating kind." She gave another smile.
Well, once you get to know me, that changes in a hurry.
He eyed the matchbook.
I'm curious about the flamingo. How long's it been closed?
She took a towel to the glassware she was stacking. Since the first of the year, they got through Christmas and New Year's. Couldn't keep it going.
Sharp took a deep drag, considering.
What happens to big dead casinos in the middle of the desert?
Dunno, she shrugged. I'm not sure it's ever happened before, but I hear rumors.
Rumors were Sharp's stock in trade lately. He raised an eyebrow.
I understand some guy from back east is behind the scenes since Mr. Siegel died.
She wiped a rocks glass dry and stacked it neatly on the shelf.
Rumor has it he's bringing in new people to run it.
Mr. Siegel? She nodded.
He was always nice to me. It's a shame.
Sharp hesitated, thinking. Know any of the guys who are coming in?
Haven't seen them.
She waved a dismissive hand and reached under the counter.
But I'm good here. I won't be back over there.
She brought over a bowl of peanuts.
It gives me the creeps now.
He nabbed a few nuts. It had been a while since the picnic. Ever meet any of the guys from Chicago there? That question was electric. She had her back to him, but in the mirror behind the bar, her eyes darted.
Who are you, mister?
Just curious. Sharp washed down the peanuts with the last of his drink. The story I heard was that mob money from Chicago had supported it and that not keeping them happy is what got Mr. Siegel taken out.
Yeah, I heard that too.
She stuck her hand across the bar.
I'm Wanda.
Jeff. He shook her offered hand. Where you from, Wanda?
Before this? I was in Los Angeles trying to break into the movies.
She gave him another smile. She had a charming smile.
Originally Bowling Green, Kentucky. You?
Texas.
I like Texas.
Her smile broadened. She moved to take the order of a couple who sat down in the saddles at the end of the bar. The happy hour crowd had started to roll in. Wanda got busy, and he decided he should see if Ronnie had cooled down any. He finished the drink and left a quarter. Something about Wanda ticked a box in his brain, and he didn't think it was the cleavage peeking out from behind the vest. Sharp entered 72 West to find the room empty, but the bathroom door closed. He knocked. Ronnie, you okay in there? There was a sniff from beyond the door.
Yes.
Her voice cracked. You sure? Sounds like you're on your way to blubbering. He turned the knob and stepped in. She was soaking in the tub and scrambled, splashing, to cover up.
What are you doing? She asked. Jeff, get out of here.
Nope. Sharp did his best to keep his eyes where they belonged. We need to talk this through. What's wrong?
What's wrong?
Ronnie paused.
I've never been scared like that before.
He struck a flamingo match and lit a cigarette, then handed it to her. She sucked it in and blew the exhale in his general direction. Sharp shrugged.
Well, I guess this is the exciting part of detective work. Wasn't that what you wanted?
No, not like that.
She had one arm wrapped around her knees just above the waterline, her legs pulled tight against her. Sharp tried to make his voice calming, like talking to a skittish mare.
You can't pick and choose your excitement. This isn't like the carnival at the Fat Stock Show, where you can decide whether you want to go on the Ferris wheel or not.
Ronnie frowned.
I know that, but I don't like it.
I'm not exactly doing this because it's fun.
Then why are you doing it? Ronnie asked.
Jerry Cartwright trusted me with something important. I need to get it back to him. I owe him.
She thought for a moment and took another drag on the cigarette.
How did you do it?
What?
Get rid of the fear.
Today?
No, over there.
Oh. Sharp drew a breath. I didn't. If you weren't scared, it was because you were stupid.
So I'm not being stupid?
Ronnie's eyebrows rose with the question. Not at all, he reassured her. He lit his own smoke and leaned against the sink.
I think that Mustang was a message. Maybe we're getting close to something.
He blew his own cloud away. But I'll be damned if I know what it is.
So now what?
Think there's room for two in that tub?
Chapter 34. As sunlight was streaming through the draperies, Sharp blinked himself conscious and found Ronnie's head on his shoulder, her hand on his chest. Las Vegas could indeed be fabulous. The lieutenant's watch said it was 9:30, but the sun was up, and that meant they'd slept through dinner and past what he thought of as breakfast time. His stomach growled to emphasize the point. He tried to move his arm, and she yawned awake. Good morning, he said to the mop of hair in his face. She paused a moment and raised herself on one arm. He watched for her reaction. Her smile made something jump in his chest.
Good morning.
Ronnie stretched. She rolled the distance across the enormous bed and snatched a garment from the floor.
I haven't slept like that in years.
Me neither.
He enjoyed the show as she shrugged into his shirt and padded to the bathroom. Half an hour later, as she maneuvered her lipstick and he combed his hair, she asked, "Big day planned?"
Las Vegas Air Base Personnel Department.
Sharp nodded his tie. Ronnie gave him a slow nod.
What if he's back in Fort Worth and not missing at all?
The airbase and the LVPD are about the only other places to look.
He checked his business card supply. If he's not here, then yeah, we'll pack it up and head home. He put on his holster and jacket and slipped the tinfoil into his pocket.
Why don't you come with? I'll keep you safe if it gets exciting.
Ronnie grimaced.
After yesterday? No, thank you. That swimming pool is all the excitement I need. I'm going to have room service breakfast and then go read by the pool like I'm on the vacation I told the judge I would take.
He gave her a kiss on the way out the door. I'll check on you later. Sharp had gone into the Army as a platoon sergeant. He knew how the wartime Army worked and guessed correctly that even the newly carved off Air Force could bury things under paperwork. He mopped his head in the triple-digit heat and waited to be introduced to a Lieutenant Evanston in personnel who was glad to be of as little help as possible. Sharp explained his concerns about the missing major, and the lieutenant nodded politely. He did a cursory search of a file cabinet and found nothing. Sharp pressed Evanston about other records, which brought in a Captain Miller. He was no help either. The Air Force learned fast. They were every bit as cloudy as the Army had been, miles of red tape that led nowhere. Why couldn't they be efficient, like, say, the post office? You gave those guys 2 cents for a stamp, and your letter went anywhere and everywhere. One thing he did notice, if these guys were deliberately hiding something, they were as good at it as anybody he'd ever met. They were either actors on par with Errol Flynn, or they were just desk jockeys shuffling papers. After 3 hours, he was certain it was the latter. It was pretty clear no Major Cartwright was assigned to the base. The captain didn't recall having ever even seen a Major Cartwright, and he said he met all the officers who came through. He was a fountain of knowledge. Sharp looked into his blank face and saw nothing but another dead end. He said his thank yous and headed back out into the broiling summer sun. There was a thunderous roar, and he looked up as the now familiar silhouette of a giant B-36 Peacemaker rumbled toward the runway.
Sharp walked along the cyclone fence, wishing he'd brought his binoculars as the behemoth aircraft touched down and began taxiing toward a group of war surplus bombers. Sticking out like a sore thumb was a triple-tailed Lockheed Constellation, a sparkling jewel in the middle of a field of army drab paint jobs. The brilliant white and red paint scheme of TWA on the graceful airliner was hard to miss. What, Sharp wondered, would a civilian airliner be doing on an Air Force runway? Ronnie had mentioned that the major palled around with Howard Hughes, and the millionaire aircraft designer owned Transcontinental and Western Airlines. Another clue? Another mystery? He shook his head and returned to the car. Back at the fabulous El Grande, Ronnie had turned a little pink poolside, despite the umbrella and her oversized hat. He ordered a beer and squatted onto a chaise lounge beside her, his summer suit contrasting with her new swimsuit. She looked at him over her magazine. "So Las Vegas is a bust?" Sharp nodded. "It is a riddle in the middle of a question surrounded by a mystery." "Well, the postcards only say, 'Come visit fabulous Las Vegas.'" Ronnie fanned herself. "They never promise you'll find anything." "I've got one more idea, but it's a longer long shot than driving out here was." "We could go on out to California?" She had a note of hope in her voice. Sharp shook his head. "More like dropping by the LVPD in the morning." Ronnie rolled her eyes. "You do know how to show a girl a good time." "You know, I think I can. Did you bring a dress?" She was wearing it when they walked past the buffet arm in arm to the less cowboy-styled and more ornate dining salon. That was followed by dancing. The El Grande Orchestra was tremendous, and the Jack Benny on the Opera House stage really was that Jack Benny. They laughed until their sides hurt, and Ronnie got a picture with the radio star after the show. The evening took the stress away, and they slept like contented lovers. The next morning, Sharp slipped out of bed and tried to make as little noise as possible. He dressed in the bathroom, tucking the Colt into its holster and the tinfoil into Wu's secret pocket. When he opened the door, Ronnie was awake, watching him from one elbow. "Is this it? Last day of fabulous?"
"Last day in Las Vegas. Let's keep working on the fabulous."
"I can do that." She smiled. He kissed her.
"I'll be back as soon as I'm done at the PD.
Sharp told the desk sergeant he wanted to talk to somebody about a missing person. After a short wait, Detective Lenny Rubenstein met him in a side office looking over the business card he'd given the sarge.
"Private Eye, huh?"
Rubenstein was slight and olive-skinned. He placed the business card in his breast pocket.
"You're a long way from home."
Sharp shrugged.
"Not for long. I just want to see if you've got anything on this guy, and then I'm headed
home. He gave him the basics, plus or minus a few specific facts. The cop lit a cigarette and looked at him through the exhale.
"I'll tell you, we don't get much cooperation with the Army people. They stay to themselves and have very little to do with us."
"Standard Army protocol."
"Nothing happens when they get in a jam in town?"
"Oh, sure." The detective tapped the ashes off his smoke.
"We'll have a couple of enlisteds get into it over a broad or a few too many cocktails on payday and get into a fight. They go in the holding tank until the MPs come get them. We pass along the specifics, and that's it. Judge Advocate General takes our paperwork, and that's all we hear of it."
"So if it's something serious, like a murder or a kidnapping?" Sharp asked. Rubenstein nodded.
"Same thing. If it's Army jurisdiction, we pass it along."
"Tidy." The detective narrowed his eyes.
"If your major has disappeared, it's because somebody on the Army side of the fence wanted him to. You should talk to them."
"I did." Sharp sighed in exasperation. "Stonewalled.
I've tried going over it, around it, and under it.
Yeah, they're really good at that. They can bury you in paperwork.
They went through the records for the weeks since Cartwright had last been seen in Fort Worth. Nothing. Sharp had pockets full of nothing. Sometimes the evidence and the clues would never yield the answer. He shook hands with Rubenstein, and the cop showed him out. Out to a big, wide world full of questions and no answers. People were trying to kill him, and nobody bothered to tell him why. Sharp looked at himself in the rearview mirror. He'd given this his full measure. Maybe gone above and beyond. As he drove through Las Vegas to the El Grande, he knew he was missing something, but it wasn't going to be found at this rate. He needed to start looking down the road. He had no more clues, no job, no home, and a pretty terrific girl wondering what was next. The problem was, he had no idea. Kenny the cowbell boy was back on the job, and he acted oddly, quiet, watching him out of the corner of his eye. It was the kind of thing that got Sharp's senses up. The door to the room was ajar. His first thought was the maid, but stepping in reminded him of the destruction that had visited Mrs. Hunnicky's rental house. The room had been tossed. He yanked the Colt and cursed himself on how cavalier he'd gotten as he stepped around open drawers and their contents on the floor. Their suitcases and clothing were thrown about. He followed his gun into the bathroom and found it empty. He stepped back into the hall and made sure the door latched. Then he sprinted to the pool. Ronnie's sunglasses and hat were there, but she wasn't. He bolted to the lifeguard stand, but the kid with white zinc smeared on his nose hadn't seen a thing. Maybe a man, but he didn't recall. There were a lot of people who walked by the pool. Sharp made a beeline for the front desk and demanded to see the manager. He was directed to the saloon, where a tall, distinguished gentleman in a conservative western-cut suit was talking with Wanda behind the bar.
"How may I help you, sir?"
Sharp's brain stumbled over how to classify his relationship with Ronnie.
"My girl has disappeared, and somebody went through our room. 72 West.
The manager frowned and snapped his fingers at a passing cowbell boy.
"Get Mr. Benton, won't you?"
Then turned back to Sharp.
"I'm Robert Ogilvy, manager of the El Grande. Mr. Benton is our hotel detective. We'll get this sorted out. Mr....
The question hung in the air as the answer paced back and forth. "Sharp. Jeff Sharp."
"I can assure you, Mr. Sharp, this type of thing is very rare at the El Grande. Whatever the issue is, we will get it resolved quickly and discreetly. You can count on that."
Sharp nodded his understanding. A destination resort that charged $5 a night couldn't have guests disappearing and rooms getting ransacked. Bad for the reputation.
"Please get Mr. Sharp something."
He motioned to Wanda and rechecked his watch.
"I'll go see if I can't hurry Mr. Benton along."
Wanda looked like she wanted to say something, but instead built a scotch and pushed it and a matchbook across the bar to him. He nodded thanks and lit a lucky as Ogilvy scurried off and Wanda disappeared to the far corner of the bar. Another patron sat down for an early afternoon refreshment. Having been a cop once upon a time, Sharp knew a thug when he saw one. The thug had a broken nose and cauliflower ears that told Sharp he'd met his share of cops. The cold eyes met Sharp's gaze, and their owner moved to park on the stool next to him. He swiped the matchbook, lit up, and blew the smoke over the bar.
"So, you's from Texas."
His accent was thick with the south side of Chicago. Sharp nodded warily. His eyes scurried around. Wanda had disappeared. Everyone had vanished. The thug turned his broken nose to Sharp.
"Fort Worth, Texas, by chance?"
"Well, we say it as all one word, Fort Worth."
Sharp took a sip.
"What's it to you?"
The thug glanced around the quiet, empty bar.
"I got some friends who want to meet with you."
The hair on the back of Sharp's neck was doing the samba. He casually checked the Hamilton.
I may be free for dinner. Who is it?
He shifted on the stool and opened his jacket to show the snubby revolver tucked in his waistband.
It's guys who don't want to wait until dinner.
Sharp scrubbed out his cigarette, swallowed the drink, put a quarter on the bar for Wanda, and stood up.
Let's go chat.
The thug stood and hitched his pants. Sharp swept the glass off the bar, and the thug's eyes followed it all the way to the crash. When he looked up, Sharp belted him on the chin. He fell backward onto a saddle, and Sharp went for his Colt, but the world went dark before he got there. Chapter 35. Some people go their entire lives without getting knocked out. Sharp was taking it up as a hobby. He woke up fuzzy, then came to with a start. The late summer heat in Nevada could have one believe the Sunday school preacher was right, and he was waking up in hell. The room was all wood paneling with a large picture window. This version of hell was much nicer than the last time he'd been KO'd and woke up in a barn. The underworld had a decent padded and upholstered chair, and he wasn't tied to it. Behind a big modern desk, silhouetted against the neon signs blinking in the Las Vegas twilight, sat the devil himself, in the form of Doyle Deniker. Doyle was shuffling papers and didn't notice Sharp was awake until he tried to sit up with a groan. The mobster finally looked up from his paperwork.
Well, well. Welcome to the world of the living, Jeff.
Then Sharp noticed they weren't alone. His old friends, Lieutenant Colonel Martin and sidekick Captain Billings, were in chairs by the door. His hand went to the lump on his noggin. It was on top of the last one.
This is living in Las Vegas, Doyle?
His eyes finally focused, and someone was missing.
Where's Ronnie?
Doyle gave him a lopsided grin.
Las Vegas is what you make of it, Sharp.
Then he grew serious. She's fine. You have my word. Sharp's head cleared a bit.
If anything happens to her, Doyle, this will get ugly very quickly, especially for your Central Intelligence buddies here.
Doyle broke into a broad smile and nodded to them.
I told you he was good. So you know about the CIA, do you?
He seemed quite pleased with himself. Sharp frowned.
I know as much as anybody.
Billings interrupted.
Then you don't know very much.
He really knew how to get Sharp's goat.
Don't count on it, tough guy.
He reached for the Colt. His holster was empty. Billings cut a crooked grin.
Not so cocky now, huh, tough guy?
Sharp stared at the guy long enough to get his message across.
First chance I get, buddy. Doyle, what are you doing with these guys?
Martin took over the conversation.
What's a small-time PI from Cowtown doing in Las Vegas?
Sharp shrugged.
I'm on vacation. I collect gangster trading cards and wanted to come see where all the action was.
You're a riot. Billings smiled without a trace of humor.
Here to open for Jack Benny, funny guy?
I know a few good ones. Sharp rubbed the tenderest spot on the bump on his old bump. He needed some ice, maybe with scotch all around it.
Hear the one about the disappearing Air Force major? The one who never existed?
Doyle didn't react, but the CIA guys shared a concerned look. These assholes would last about 20 seconds at a poker table, Sharp thought.
And you thought he was here? Martin asked.
I'd give it good odds. Sharp shook his throbbing head.
Seems to be a lot of B-36 work here with the new bombing range.
It seemed logical that the major would go from one B-36 installation to another. They seemed to relax with that, and Sharp made a mental note. Something was going on, and it wasn't bombers. Doyle cleared his throat.
Any luck?
Not yet, Sharp admitted. But I'll find something. It's hard to make someone disappear without a trace.
Billings and Martin shared a look and stood to leave. The larger goon pointed with his hat.
It's not as difficult as you might think.
Sharp took a little pride that Billings still favored one leg as they left. That brought a smile, but it didn't help his sore noggin. Doyle offered his humidor, and Sharp took a Cuban.
You in bed with these guys, Doyle? You, the Chicago mob, and the CIA are going to build a city in the desert dedicated to gambling? Or have I just been hit on the head too many times?
He puffed the Monte Cristo to life and waved out the match.
Which, I might add, you didn't have to do. You could have just called. That was Billings's idea. He went to get you and said you threw the first punch. I'd have preferred you walk in here on your own accord.
The mobster took his own cigar, clipped the end, and took his time lighting up.
So, yes, Mr. Lansky's friends from Chicago, the CIA, and you forgot the military, they're chipping in. They're all just a means to an end.
He waved his stogie to the room and the darkening evening behind him. He then changed the subject. It was a gift he had.
How long you staying?
Sharp stood.
I thought I was due for a nice vacation with a beautiful future and potential Mrs. Sharp. But fate seems to have other plans.
I understand what you mean. Doyle reached in a drawer and pitched across a copy of the Fort Worth Examiner. 2 inches tall, all caps, the headline blared, "Vice Squads Sweep Down Thunder Road."
Happened the night I left.
The photo of the smoldering Four Deuces was taken from the parking lot at Rico's. Doyle got a little misty.
I was in Chicago, and while I was gone, my home and its expansive game room mysteriously caught fire and burned to the ground. Total loss.
Sharp looked at the glowing tip of his cigar.
You should have come up with a better alibi than Chicago.
Doyle paused.
Oh? Too close to Lansky. It's a red flag.
Doyle eyed him. Sharp waved his cigar at the big picture window.
I think I've got the deal with you, Gentry, Capples, and Lansky figured out. But this? Las Vegas? I don't think you knew about this until after the major went off the deep end. You showed up at the Deuces with a suitcase, and it had an American Airlines baggage tag from Chicago. You were already working a deal with Lansky. None of that made sense until right this minute.
Doyle leaned back and took a deliberate puff.
Go on. I know you've always got one eye on the future, Doyle. When you heard about Leo's crusade to shut down Thunder Road, you figured you're done with Texas, and with Bugsy dead, Lansky needs an experienced operator to handle Las Vegas. Everybody wins. Except Capples.
Sharp sat down and took a long draw on the Cuban. His eyes never left Doyle's. Doyle slowly smiled.
You know, that fire destroyed everything. All manner of potential evidence up in smoke. All the notes and files you gave me. The fire chief, you know Bert? Hell of a good guy and an unbelievably good blackjack player. He said my wine cellar made it one of the hottest fires they'd ever worked.
Sharp shook his head.
And you happened to be out of town?
I was attending a memorial service.
Doyle closed a folder on his desk. In Chicago, for the late Mr. Capples. Such a tragic end. Now what? This.
Doyle spread his arms as if to encompass the entire desert.
You're right. Las Vegas is the future. Thunder Road was once. Now it's here.
Sharp pointed to the ground where they sat.
The flamingo?
Doyle leaned back in his chair and fixed his gaze on Sharp.
I have a contract with ownership to get everything repaired and squared away. We're about a month out.
So you're moving here?
Already have, Doyle said. I've got a suite at the El Grande temporarily. I'm building a house. Las Vegas is home now. No game room this time. No highly flammable wine cellar that a single misplaced ember can set fire to. He took a puff, admired the cigar, placed the arsonist's best friend in the ashtray, and pulled Sharp's own .45 Colt from a drawer. Doyle set it on his desk.
You've got an interesting theory, Sharp. What are you going to do with it?
Do with it? Nothing. Like you said, there's no evidence. Gent killed Capples, and I have no idea who killed Gentry. I had nothing to do with that. I liked Gentry. He was very useful. Which leaves the Central Intelligence guys, and I can't win with them. Take it from me, that is very much a stacked deck.
So now what?
Sharp's poker face deserted him. His eyes flicked to the Colt. I don't suppose I can have my gun back. There was a long pause while Doyle relit his cigar and Sharp stewed. The mobster picked up the phone and dialed.
Come get him, he said, and hung up.
I take it that's a no on the gun?
Doyle broke into a wide grin around his cigar.
I can do better than that. He opened a desk drawer and handed across yet another envelope, along with the Colt.
It's the title to the cord.
Sharp had to admit Doyle was a devious, manipulative son of a bitch, but he had style. Doyle blew a perfect smoke ring across the room.
There's a wedding present in the trunk.
If these goons have gotten to her, I'm pretty sure that'll be the end of that.
Never argue with a man who can tell the future.
You don't happen to know where they're keeping her, do you?
Doyle waved the large cigar.
I've been assured she'll be perfectly fine. You'll meet up with her soon. You two have a lot to talk about.
Sharp automatically checked the Colt's magazine and considered the city beyond the window.
So, you'll make a go here in the desert with this bunch, and that's it?
Doyle chuckled.
That's never it with these guys. There's always something else. Another carrot farther down the line to draw you in.
That get old?
Depends on how much you like carrots. Come on, I'll show you out.
They walked through the darkened casino. Doyle pointed out details and changes to be made. Repairs were well underway. It had potential. Doyle was going to make a fortune if he could get people to come out.
It looks great, but how are you going to fill it up? Sharp asked. Where do the people come from?
Doyle shot him a knowing look.
The army is going to get very big here.
You mean the Air Force?
Yes.
Doyle stopped and a question came over his face.
Where did you hear that?
Sharp knew something Doyle didn't think he did.
I'm an investigator, Doyle. Finding things out is what I do.
Doyle paused for half a beat.
Yes, well, the Air Force will be bringing in thousands of personnel. They'll need entertainment here in the middle of the desert.
Sharp stepped around an old can of paint.
And you're just the man to improve morale. Recreation, libation, and fornication.
Doyle smiled.
That's what I do. Plus, people in California must vacation somewhere. It's not like they can go to Hawaii or something. If we do this right, they'll come here.
They'd reached the front door. Doyle turned the key and Sharp stuck out his hand.
So long, Doyle. It's been fun.
The mobster shook the offered hand. Nodding.
It will be.
The door opened into the growing darkness, and Sharp looked around for a phone booth so he could call a cab. He swallowed hard when he saw a government-gray Plymouth idling at the curb.
These guys would never stop. He strolled to the driver's side and peeked inside.
I think either the government owned a lot of gray Plymouths, or they mostly drove up and down Thunder Road. It's good to see that Doyle is back on his feet in Las Vegas, isn't it? Seriously, were you at all worried about Doyle? He's the type of guy that always lands on his feet. There just may be somebody under them when he does. Tune in next time to find out who's behind the wheel and in the driver's seat of this mystery. So don't forget to subscribe to Camcat Unwrapped. If you don't want to miss a beat, listen now on the audiobook platform of your choice. All our books are also available in print and ebook formats on camcatbooks.com or wherever books are sold. Before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review on your preferred podcast platform. Thank you so much. Camcat Unwrapped also offers other Camcat books as podcasts. And check out our interviews with authors, editors, and other bookworms, as well as our background episodes, where we unwrap exclusive content related to our books. Tune in again to Camcat Unwrapped, because Camcat Unwrapped is where book lovers meet.